Hey, what's up? It's Nolan from Past Gas by Donut Media. We are an automotive history show. This week, we're talking the life story of Gilles Villeneuve, Canada's most important Formula One driver. This guy is a national hero up there and truly one of the greats, taken from us too soon. He started out racing snowmobiles when he was a teenager. He invented one of the most important snowmobile innovations ever, which is crazy for a Formula One driver to do, and eventually became just one of the most legendary drivers of the 1970s. This guy raced for such a short time, but had such a large impact, and it was super cool to talk about a Quebecois racing legend. That's Past Gas by Donut Media, available anywhere you get your podcasts. Subscribe today. Number one automotive podcast, Past Gas. The newest issue of the 1963 Carcraft magazine featured one of the most grotesque advertisements most had ever laid eyes on. A mangy cartoon rat. His bloodshot, bulging eyes, his oversized, panting mouth, stuffed to the limit with razor-sharp teeth and a wet, lolling tongue. And his hulking form, stuffed into a fantasy hot rod. His name is Rat Fink, and he's introducing you and the world to the rage in California. Rat Fink was artist Ed Big Daddy Roth's latest envelope-pushing creation that drove teenagers to car shows and parents up the wall.
Get pitted.
This fiend joined a legion of hot-rodding baddies Ed had introduced to the world via his airbrushed weirdo tees and custom car work, the former of which was making the auto industry establishment just as crazy. Ed Roth changed the American culture by harnessing his passion for art and his disdain for the status quo, and channeled it into groundbreaking car and apparel designs. But how did a young man with no automotive engineering training, who almost flunked out of high school, make such an impact on American car design? How did he stand out in Southern California during the height of custom car madness? And what type of legacy can a few crude creatures really leave behind? Today on Past Gas, it's the gnarly life and creations of hot rod iconoclast Ed Big Daddy Roth.
Past Gas Podcast. It's about cars, it's not about ports.
Dude, the beginning of that, you nailed. It was like gravelly.
Yes.
It was really descriptive. Mm-hmm. If I were listening to that in my car, I'd either turn it off or turn it up. There's no in between, dude. Just like, oh, I need more of that, or I can't handle that.
You don't even have to adjust the bass. No. You got the bass in there. It's nice.
Thanks, man. If you turn it down, you're too old.
Yeah, yeah, dude. I can hear your voice knocking in my subs.
Whoa. Thank you, man.
Good thing I installed that box, because now I'm just...
Yes, welcome to Past Gas, everybody. I almost did a DRS intro just now, but I realized I didn't have any sort of funny thing to say. My name is Nolan Sykes. I'm joined by my co-hosts, James Pumphrey and Joe Weber. What's up, guys?
Hey, y'all. We're workshopping new stuff.
Yeah. I just spit into my face.
Dude, some exciting chart news. Not only are we the number one automotive podcast on Apple, we are now the number 60 comedy podcast, which is a way bigger pool to be a top 60 fish in.
It's thanks to all our subscribers and anyone who downloads it every week.
Yeah, thank you guys, sincerely.
Yeah, and as much as I've always wanted to be car, I've wanted to be funny even longer. So thank you guys for, I mean, even thinking we're funny. But top 60 funny? Smartless, we're coming for you.
That's right.
If you want to see a black and white documentary about us taking private jets on tour, let HBO know, or Max know. Hit up Max, be like, I got to see them Past Gas boys in sepia tone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What do you guys know about the big green rat known as Rat Fink?
I think Rat Fink is just a thing I've always recognized.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Mickey Mouse. It's like
but
a,
like twisty.
It's like a
so twisted mouse, dude.
He's not a mouse. He's a rat.
It's just like such an iconic image. You know, like one of those things like, I was like always attracted to like Rat Fink. I mean, I should have known I liked cars.
Yeah, even
back then.
I think we're due for kind of a Rat Fink resurgence at some point in the next 5 years or so. Uh-huh. The late 2000s, you know, was very, people loved Von Dutch.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
People were into that kind of like aesthetic.
Flash tattoo aesthetic.
I think it's coming back around at some point. I like to think that we're going to be on the forefront.
This is my prediction. I think like Born and Raised or Market is going to license Rat Fink.
I'm excited for the Rat Fink resurgence.
Me too.
We're
going to
start
finally
slicking our hair back.
Let's slick our hair back.
We're going to be driving our 32 deuces to work.
Pencil mustaches, white tees with cigarette packs rolled up in the sleeves.
Rolled up in them. I got a whole back tattoo of a real creepy ghoul driving a hot rod right now. It's bleeding through my shirt.
I'm going to have a comb that looks like a switchblade.
Oh, wow. I'm going to have a switchblade that looks like a comb.
Oh.
I'm trying to imagine that.
Well, it just flips out, and then you're like, shh, shh, shh. You're like, I got a knife, and then it's really a comb.
So it's the same thing.
Well, a switchblade looks like a comb. It's like, oh, I think this is a little black comb, and then I'm like, oh, yeah. I'll whittle you away.
You know who doesn't comb their hair?
Who?
Every rat on earth?
Everybody.
Yeah, that's right. Let's get into it. Ed Big Daddy Roth was born to middle-class German Lutheran parents on March 4th, 1932 in Beverly Hills, California.
Wow.
But this was before the post-WW2 development that put Beverly Hills on the map for luxury retail, fine dining, and multi-million dollar estates. Ed's father, Henry, was a cabinet maker who also chauffeured silent film star Mary Pickford in her limousine on the side.
Yeah, I was actually looking at pictures of Los Angeles back during this time recently, and Beverly Hills was like farmland.
Mm-hmm. There's a racetrack there for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But like back in 1932, it wasn't like Rodeo Drive, it was farms. Mm-hmm.
Rodeo Drive.
Middle of, yeah. Think of Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm imagining it.
Like Nebraska. Dusty Nebraska.
Dusty Nebraska.
Iowa. Orange Groves, as far as the eye can see.
Yeah. A lot different. In their German-speaking household, Ed and his younger brother, Gordon, learned woodworking from Henry. Their father was fairly strict and taught his boys to work with their hands as a means of keeping them out of trouble. Despite the inherent creativity in building as a craft, Henry lacked interest in Ed's creative curiosity. Likely because it was directed towards art and automobiles. Ed's mother, Marie Roth, a homemaker, was much more encouraging when it came to his artistic impulses. In school, Ed learned English and developed his drawing skills in between classes. And unsurprisingly, his favorite subjects were monsters and hot rods.
Mine too.
Yeah. What does Tim Robinson say about monsters? I thought monsters were on Earth with us. When the pig comes into his house.
If you want to hear more about I Think You Should Leave, you can listen to Joe's other podcast.
Called I Think You Should Listen.
I Think You Should Listen. It's Joe's Tim Robinson themed podcast.
Ed's teen years aligned fortuitously with the post-WW2 popularization of hot rods. As we've discussed on the show many times, automotive production was halted during the war in favor of military vehicle production. Therefore, any American who didn't buy a new car in the year leading up to Pearl Harbor was driving a junker by the time the war ended. Today, a 6 or 7 year old car isn't that old, but in the 30s, the life expectancy of a car was about 6.75 years or 50 to 90,000 miles, depending on how well it was maintained.
That's like that. The picture of the woman during the Depression where she's got her kids, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That woman's 30 in that picture.
Oh. With Americans ravenous for new cars, automotive production exploded in 1946, leading households to dump their old vehicles en masse just as soldiers were returning from overseas with their new mechanical skills they developed in the service. Many servicemen who were curious about hot rod culture could now scoop up one of those old 30s cars for dirt cheap and experiment with it easily. That's exactly what Ed did in 1946 when he turned 14, the legal driving age at the time.
Oh, God, I'm so glad we changed that.
He became obsessive about his first car, a three-window 1932-33 Ford Coupe, and rebuilt it entirely. In 1949, Ed graduated from Bell High School despite failing most of his classes, aside from auto shop and art.
They're was like, life just so easy
like,
back
get
then?
Get him out of here.
Yeah, life was easy.
He graduated early by failing all of his classes.
Hey, different time, man. However, his years spent tinkering with his coupe helped him to get into East Los Angeles College, where he studied engineering, mechanical drawing, and physics. Ed quickly grew bored, however, as he hoped to learn more about automotive design. During the Korean War in 1951, Ed joined the Air Force. During that time, he went to bomb site school, learned how to make maps, and became an expert barber. The military took him to Colorado, Morocco, and finally, South Carolina, where he was honorably discharged in 1955. After his military stint, Ed returned to Southern California, where he married his high school sweetheart, Sally. Soon, the two began having children, and eventually, they'd have five boys, and Ed got back to his other true love, Hot Rod.
I want to make some rats with you.
What?
Ed was in his early 20s when he took his first job at Sears, dressing mannequins and designing store displays for $1 an hour, which is probably a lot back then.
Yeah, I mean, it's
probably
like
not.
11 obviously. Bucks today. In today's
also, yeah. I would argue that the Air Force is probably his first job.
Yeah, that's the right? work. Dressing yeah. mannequins sounds creepy.
They ain't got no hair for me to style.
Let's make sure the collar's right on this one. Let's button all the buttons.
Button every single button.
Around this time, he became friendly with Kenny Howard, the father of modern pinstriping, known best for his artist moniker, Von Dutch.
Oh.
Uh-huh. Inspired by Howard's artistry and driven by his own creative hunger, Ed started a side hustle charging $4, about $45 today, a car for pinstriping and flame jobs.
That's so cheap.
Which he painted in his driveway after work and on weekends. Roth taught himself how to pinstripe, a process of hand painting artistic lines on a car with sword-shaped brushes to enhance the curves of the surface in complementary colors.
Yeah.
The cool. like sword-shaped meaning like the bristles on these brushes are super long.
Mm-hmm. They're yeah, like I think cut in a way or something, and they're mm-hmm. like curved almost. It's not yeah. just like straight paintbrush.
It's really cool to watch, and I'm glad that there's a select few people who are keeping this alive.
It's very
because
cool.
it is one of the coolest.
When they do it with craft. Both hands, like symmetrically, yeah. is so impressive.
That's a thing.
Yeah,
damn,
it's such a cool part of car culture. I follow a few of these guys on Instagram. Pinstripes are aesthetic embellishments, but they also hide surface flaws like scratches.
Hmm.
While Von Dutch popularized the style in the 1950s for cars and motorcycles, pinstriping was first seen in the 1800s on carriages, handguns, and rifles.
Ooh, a gun with pinstriping on it?
A pinstripe gun? Today, pinstriping can be done with thin vinyl tape rather than by hand, but in mid-century Los Angeles, these custom paint jobs were a rare and in-demand skill.
That's cool, man.
Ed advertised his home business by lettering, striping, and flaming his 1948 Ford sedan, which he called appropriately the Roth.
Nice.
The popularity of his services led to his teaming up with fellow stripers Bud the Baron Crozier and Tom Kelly. No nickname required. They opened a shop called the Crazy Painters in 1957, and together the team attracted enough work that Ed was able to leave Sears and day jobs behind for good.
Ed, you gotta stop painting the mannequins, man. I'm making eyes.
The Crazy Painters were known for adorning any and all vehicles with flames, scallops, pinstripes, and other custom paintwork. These designs made cars look fast, even when they were sitting still.
That's cool, man.
Like, I know what scallops means.
Uh-huh.
But for a second, I was
hungry.
Like, for a second, I was like, just the round, like kind of wet.
Before long, Ed started experimenting with airbrushing T-shirts and the types of cars and monsters he'd spent years doodling in school. His designs took off when he made logo shirts for his car club, the Maywood Drag Wagons.
Nice.
Each individual shirt had a wild caricature of the member it belonged to. The popularity of these designs led to his aptly named Weird Shirts being sold at the shop as well as his Carcraft magazine.
Have you guys ever gotten like your caricature done on Venice Beach?
Yeah. Yeah, they weren't nice.
No.
They weren't very nice about it.
The one that did me, like, went hard. And
yeah.
I was like, yeah, I do look like that, but God.
Mine made me, like, ripped, and I had a huge one. He gave me a real huge one, you know?
He drew you naked?
Yeah. I was like, man, I don't like tennis, but thanks for the huge one.
We'll be right back with more of this story, but first, a word from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
I found some bad news about Von Dutch.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
So probably didn't. That guy probably didn't believe in COVID.
Ed Boswell, this is a Cody. Ed Boswell, founder of Von Dutch's clothing line in Los Angeles Magazine,
said...
But
this isn't Von Dutch the guy.
No, but this is the original
This is the
guy.
Artist guy.
Okay.
Von Dutch yeah. man.
He said, quote, Von Dutch was an artistic Nazi, an aesthetic Nazi, and a racist.
Ugh.
But he was not a white power guy. He hated everyone too much to be one of those. What does that mean?
What?
What a jerk.
So when Ed started painting monsters, this was a cultural changing moment. Prior to Ed's designs, graphic t-shirts were relegated to servicemen as a part of their uniform, and no one had shirts customized to fit their interests and personalities. What? All I do is wear shirts with pics on them. I'm wearing one right now. There's a duck on it.
Yeah. Sometimes I think, like, if I could go back to the 80s, I could have been, like, a rapper. You know?
Oh,
it's
yeah.
so easy.
You could have been a professional skateboarder and a rapper.
Yeah. And I think if I went to the 50s, I could just be like a Anything. T-shirt maker.
She's a really good gal.
Fever dream. What is
She's
that?
She's a really good gal. Millions right there. If I live in the 50s,
you're set for life.
Elvis yep. broke records with his single "Hubba Hubba Honka Honka."
Yeah. Yeah, like literally, dude. This is like back then. T-shirts didn't have pictures on them.
Yeah.
Great. In fact, in the 1950s, tees were considered underwear, and wearing them plain as a shirt to school could get you sent home.
Dang, what?
Where's your collar? You're wearing panties
I
on
can,
your chest.
I can see.
Ed left Crozier and Kelly to open his own shop in 1959. This is when he began advertising his shirts as Weirdo, a branding that has stuck with his styles over the decades. He also continued with his custom paintwork, but most importantly, this is when he branched out to the custom build work that made him into legend.
And that was when Ed's life changed. A rat driving a car jumped out and bit him in the toe.
Whoa.
In 1939, a big rat jumped out and bit his toe.
He goes, "You think?
What do you think?
I'm not going to stop on you?
You think I'm not going to stop on you?
What's that rat think?"
All right. The the Little Jewel, a 1930 Ford Model A two-door, was Ed's first foray into the show car scene. The name Little Jewel was inspired by Dwayne Steck, who named his radical custom 1954 Chevy Bel Air sports coupe Moonglow. Moonglow had an incredible impact on builders at the time, and it remains one of the most famous customs of the 1950s. Ed restyled his car by swapping the original grille for a 1932 grille and had Nerf bars with small accessory turn lights that he made himself at his shop.
This is pretty tame.
Yeah.
It's a pretty tame custom job.
The Little Jewel was painted in red enamel and featured a white Naga hide top with white running boards. The interior was upholstered in black and white. He chromed the undercarriage and replaced the engine himself with one from a 1950 Oldsmobile. Hell yeah. The thing probably...
It's so low. How is anyone going to see all that chrome down there?
The idea for a fiberglass car started swirling in Ed's brain after seeing a photo of Henry Ford swinging a sledgehammer on the fiberglass deck lid of a 1941 Ford. He was intrigued by the photo caption, which claimed fiberglass wouldn't dent. Yeah, it won't dent, but it'll break.
Crack, yeah.
It'll crack. Later, at the Huntington Beach Pier, he was introduced to the material when he met a surfer whose wooden board was covered with a waterproof fiberglass covering. Around this time, Ed read a Life magazine profile of the Shadoff Special, a Bonneville streamliner that hot rodder W.R. Shadoff built out of fiberglass. It's all coming together.
It's all
fiberglass. He's going to get itchy being covered in so much fiberglass.
Mm-hmm.
Ed was the first hot rodder to branch off from the traditional chopped and channeled T-bucket style that was standard in the community. Chopping and channeling was a process of cutting away and refitting sections of a car's metal body to create different profiles and sizes than what you could buy off the lot. You cut the pillars, make them lower, make the roof line lower. Pretty cool. And then channeling is when you actually cut holes in the body itself, and it lays lower on the chassis. It's all about getting low. There's high boys and there's low boys. Low boys are channeled.
Yeah.
High boys, they just sit on top of the frame rails there.
What's tubbing?
Tubbing is when you make the tire. What's the term? What am I?
The talking? Wheel wells.
The wheel wells. Thank you, James. When you make the wheel wells bigger, so you can put bigger tires under there.
Yeah, so if you look in the back of a drag car or the front of a drift car,
there's a big sheet metal,
like a side of a trailer,
fenders.
Yes,
my dog's got long toenails. She went crazy. She cut up all my pillars on my bed. Been waiting to say that for minutes.
That's right. While these were still unique styles, there was a limit to how different these cars could be. But with fiberglass, a material that was inexpensive and easy to shape, Ed was able to sculpt entirely original, daring designs never before seen on cars. He made the bold curves, swoops, and dips of his creations by fashioning the car body entirely out of plaster and wood, which then became the female mold he used to shape the fiberglass, basically like the
mold.
The mold. Well,
yeah.
It's over the top of it, though.
It's like a mannequin for a car.
Yeah, the proof or something.
Oh, that's why he liked it so much.
Yeah, he loves mannequins.
I could put so many eyes on this.
Think I'm not going to put eyes on this?
When Ed built the Outlaw, he stole
parts. How can I tell if it's lying if I don't put eyes on it?
Ed Roth, the Outlaw. When Ed built the Outlaw, he stole parts from every junkyard in Southern California. This gorgeous Frankenstein car was made up of a modified 55 Cadillac V8 engine, the rear end of a 48 Ford. It had 58 Chevy taillights, a windshield from a 27 Dodge, headlights, Joe, from a 59 Rambler. It had motorcycle wheels up front. It had a custom chrome chassis and sported the first ever all fiberglass body on a custom car with a dreamy white and ice blue paint job.
Dude, junkyard dogs must have hated this guy.
Or maybe they loved him because he brought treats.
Yeah, big old steaks. My steak budget's out of control.
If you have ever read Hot Rod Magazine, you probably know what this car looks like. It's got
close your eyes and think of a hot rod.
Yeah, it's this basically. One. Not quite a race car or a hot rod, the Outlaw lived up to its title and shook up the custom car scene. Custom with a K. In regards to this groundbreaking moment, automotive historian Ken Gross said it best. Quote,
It was very much a futurist. He really was ahead of his time in his materials, concepts, and the breadth of his imagination.
Finished in late 1959, The Outlaw was major fodder for car shows and magazines, just as Roth had expected. Car show organizers paid Ed to display The Outlaw, which brought droves of customers to his booth.
Droves!
Fans were hungry for his airbrushed t-shirts, and they wanted their own fierce custom jobs. This rabid popularity caught the attention of model kit makers Revell, and soon a lucrative business partnership was struck between them.
That's the moneymaker right there, is the toys.
Oh, yeah. Revell's publicist, Henry Blankford, conjured the nickname Big Daddy for Ed. It acted as both a nod to the term Daddy-O, popular beatnik vernacular of the time, and the fact that Ed was 6'4 and weighed 240 pounds. He's a big guy.
That's big.
That's
He's
a like, big daddy. Fetterman level.
Yeah. Blankford is also widely credited with attempting to clean up Ed's image by outfitting him in what became his trademark look, a tuxedo and a top hat. However, according to a November 1963 Esquire essay on custom culture written by Tom Wolfe, when Revell demanded Ed spruce up, he sardonically outfitted himself in the $215 getup and wore it to every car show. The look comprised of, quote, full set of tails, silk hat, boiled shirt, cufflinks, studs, and a monocle.
What's a boiled shirt? What does that mean?
I have no idea, but it sounds expensive.
I think you boil it.
You boil the shirt.
And that makes
it. We technically boil all of our shirts when we put them in the washing machine.
I guess so. I don't. I wash everything on cold.
Oh. I like to use energy, so I do it on hot.
How dirty do you get?
So dirty.
So dirty. That's why all your shirts shrink.
Oh, yeah. It just means that the front was starched.
Oh, that's kind of weird. How did Revell take this new over-the-top look? Wolf quoted Ed as saying,
I bow and kiss all the girls' hands. The Revell guys get pretty teed off about that. But what can I say? I'm a perfect gentleman.
Through the early 1960s, Ed whipped up another brazen beauty every year. The bubble top beatnik bandit in 1961.
Is this the one in the Peterson?
I think we have seen that in the Peterson.
No, it's a different one.
Oh. So the beatnik bandit was released as one of the first Hot Wheels in 1968.
I bet that thing is worth $100,000.
Yeah. He made the, quote, hovercraft Rotar in 1962.
We don't say that word anymore.
There is also the twin-engine Mysterion in 1963. Love that name. There is the Corvair-powered Road Agent in early 64. And the asymmetrical Orbitron in late 64. I love the Orbitron.
Oh, the Road Agent is sick.
I tell you what, you drive any of these cars in South California in the summer,
you will die.
You will die.
They all have like bubble tops.
Whoa.
Then there's the board-toting Surflight in 65. And finally, the ornate Druid Princess.
Druid Princess
in late
my style.
1966.
Rules,
that
dude.
Is, it's like a carriage.
It's like Cinderella carriage with a freaking.
I've seen that car.
This is what I would drive, guys. This is like if a car was made from. It's got a baby coffin on the back.
Oh, God.
I'm fairly certain I've seen that in person.
Sir. Why are you buying so many baby coffins?
I make cars.
Checks out. Though his model car contract was profitable, Ed's t-shirt sales were booming. Commercially aberrant designs that kids liked and parents didn't were most successful as long as they weren't offensive enough to be banned by mom and dad, which is what we're trying to do at Donut. It feels dangerous, but it's not. It's like Beavis and Butthead. And Bart Simpson. His own kids inspired his grotesque caricatures. Figures with bulging, bloodshot eyes and gaping mouths filled with needle-sharp teeth.
Dude, you got to take better care of your kids.
Yeah, man.
That's what they look like.
My kids' teeth are sharp. I need this raise.
His most popular and sustaining characters are Mother's Worry, Dragnut, and Mr. Gasser. You okay?
Yep.
Nolan just puked.
I choked a little bit on Dragnut.
Dragnut. Oh, I know this guy, Dragnet. It's not a motorcycle.
He's like a zombie guy.
He's a zombie guy.
Dragnet. Oh, that guy. Okay. Yeah.
That guy's
cool.
Well,
he's got that goatee that you were talking about.
Yeah.
That you want.
Yeah, I want that sharp teeth, sharp tongue, goatee. I got 2 out of 3.
They're like Bret Michaels.
My style icon.
Dragnet.
Or no, sorry, Billy Ray Cyrus
that
has
guy,
that.
Like, there's Dragnet, and then Ed Roth is on the box for the model.
I know.
Cake.
What?
He's got a big cake.
Yeah, he's got a big old dumpy.
He's got a Fetterman donkey.
Yeah. Ed Roth walks into the room, his dumpy comes in 5 minutes later. Mother's Worry. Damn, look at that thing.
Dude, I want these toys now.
Dude, cake, 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 Ed Roth.
We'll get back to more Pass Gas, but right now, a word from our sponsors.
But 1963, Ed developed a character he is best known for today. Rat Fink. Really blew it.
The first time you've ever read it.
Yeah, I blew it. I blew it. The whole time leading up to this. 35 minutes in. Just like leading up to this moment, I freaking dropped the ball.
Don't Idiot. Give him another take, so they have to use it.
Or just RF. Rat Fink. I knew. Typically drawn in an RF t-shirt behind the wheel of a revved up vehicle or engaged in mischief.
Ooh.
I love mischief.
Get some mischief.
This degenerate funhouse mirror counterpart to Mickey Mouse was another way Ed used his designs to challenge the establishment and the commercialization of art. He attributed the name to comedian Steve Allen, who used the phrase Rat Fink frequently, but low-key, all the kids knew that the F in RF actually stood for fuck.
Oh! Yeah.
Don't bleep that, Gavin. That's the one we get. It's in context.
It's PG-13.
It's in context.
Yeah.
Steve Allen, he's a Satanist.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Maybe not. There's a Steve Allen Theater in Los Angeles that I used to perform at a lot.
Okay.
And that's where, like, the Los Angeles Satanists.
Oh, I see.
It was, like, the Steve Allen Theater and Center for Enlightenment.
Gotcha.
So he was into, like, transcendentalism and all kinds of, like, thought things.
Cool. Yeah.
Interesting.
Rat Fink debuted as an ad in a car magazine in 1963 and immediately exploded in popularity. This reckless rodent. That's how I have to read alliteration. This reckless rodent could be found on t-shirts, keychains, decals, and soon became synonymous with custom culture with a K. Even Revel, who had spent so much time clutching their pearls over Ed's decency, made three-dimensional plastic kits of Rat Fink and his other monsters as well.
Yeah.
I want one of these. I want a freaking Rat Fink. No,
big
want,
caked up Rat Fink.
In my house. Big caked up Rat Fink.
Just a big ass on that.
I want a mold of Ed Roth's tuchus. When writing about the enduring charm of Rat Fink, Lethal Threat, a modern apparel brand inspired by hot rod culture and Ed's work, swoons. No matter how feral Rat Fink's design appears, the satirical edge of Roth's intent is always there to serve as a self-reflective wink, creating a sense of solace for the counterculture without ever pandering to a wider market. Other artists associated with Ed also drew the character, including Rat Fink comics artist R.K. Sloan and Steve Fiorilla, who illustrated Roth's catalogs. Rat Fink was still a fixture in 80s and 90s sub and pop culture, even as Ed wound down the designing phase of his life. Ed drew Rat Fink artwork for the album Junkyard by Australian band The Birthday Party.
That's a cool name for a band.
White Zombie produced a song titled Rat Fink's Suicide Tanks and Cannibal Girls.
Yeah, but that's
which was featured in Beavis and Butthead Do America, which is an amazing movie. I'm not even joking at all.
Nolan, you're getting it confused with Scatfink.
Beavis and Butthead Do America also had an animated sequence reminiscent of Ed's artistic
style.
This is
the best part of the movie. Yeah. IMO.
Homages to his work can be found in band art from the Voodoo Glow Skulls.
Cool. Yes.
The Cramps.
Cool.
And Rob Zombie.
Bird with a in a car. And bird with a
vroom, vroom. Vroom, vroom. She's a zombie window wife.
Yeah, got a goth girlfriend. She likes hot rods.
She's
and
zombie.
She's Frankenstein.
Vroom, vroom, boom, boom.
Riding in Frankenstein's Cadillac.
And my wife is a Frankenstein and zombie in the window.
I'm a Dracula. I love my Frankenstein wife.
He rules, dude.
You can even find a Rap Think poster on one of the set walls of the Pee Wee Herman show.
Oh, nice.
Oh.
By the late 60s, Ed's deal with Rebel ended and he began associating with the Hell's Angels.
Oh.
This inspired a pivot to designing motorcycles. Hmm.
I think it's getting a little...
It's getting a little close to Nazi.
Yeah.
Not that... Don't kill us.
No, don't kill us.
He built an asymmetrical Buick V6 powered bike hauler he called Captain Pepe's Motorcycle and Zeppelin Repair.
I love his names.
Sick.
This thing's
whoa!
Sick.
Thing's
yo! Cool. That thing's rad. This looks like something that Max would make me drive.
Hey, we all rented them through for the weekend. You got
to
drive it.
Hey, James, you have to drive this thing.
Yeah, the owner says it's actually killed five previous owners. Five.
We don't really have a hook for the video, but we're assuming that you'll almost die, and that'll be the cold open.
Yeah.
He then started to work on a series of choppers and the first Volkswagen-powered trikes.
Hmm.
In 1967, he invested all of his money into launching his own black-and-white motorcycle magazine, Choppers. When mainstream motorcycle publications wouldn't feature his creations.
Hmm.
It's too crazy for motorcycle makes.
Wow.
Gross. It was the first custom with a K bike publication and famously featured more of the outrageous designs Roth had become known for. Plus, the early work of painter David Mann, who's renowned for his realistic images of motorcycle culture. According to the LA Times, the more, quote, respectable hot rod magazines refused to carry advertising for choppers. And by 1970, Roth lost both the magazine and his wife,
oh, no.
who divorced him and moved a few down south. He was, quote, forced to sell his collection of custom cars to stay afloat. 15 vehicles, of which he received a total of $5,500.
Oof, oh, man.
Those are probably worth $55
million. $55 million bajillion.
Dang, dude.
At least. Despite its ultimate negative impact on Ed's life, Choppers inspired the publication of Easy Riders magazine, which opened its doors in 1971. In 2018, former Easy Riders employees banded together and brought Choppers back from the dead with permission from Roth's sons. Choppers and Easy Riders are both still in publication as of this recording, although they're probably written by AI now. Ed then started working with Tim Brucker.
Jim.
Sure.
That's
your opinion.
That's
your opinion.
That is.
Ed then started working with Jim Brucker, a serious antique kitsch and prop collector slash renter. Together, they built the sets for the Buena Park attraction Movie World, Cars of the Stars.
Huh.
Here, several of Roth's cars were on display until the museum closed in 1979. Ed's life had spun out of control somewhat after losing his family, cars, and magazine. He remarried several times before shunning the rebellious characters he created and converting to Mormonism.
Wow. Whoa. Hard left.
Yeah. Uh-huh. He also took a job at Knott's Berry Farm as a sign painter, menu designer, and artist under the pseudonym Bernie Schwartz. Bernie Schwartz, whoa, the Mormon. Yeah.
Yep. Just a Mormon guy named Bernie Schwartz.
Bernie Schwartz. By the 1990s, he began appearing at car shows across the country and even started working on some new design ideas with his son, Daryl. His fourth and final marriage was to Eileen Brotherson.
Brother-son? I know.
A Mormon woman with two daughters who he remained devoted to until his death at age 69. Nice. So, Roth. On April 4th, 2001.
Dang.
Damn, dude. Brother-son is the most Mormon last name I've ever heard.
Mm-hmm. Brother-son.
Evan's sister-wife. To this day, Roth's accomplishments are celebrated annually at the Rat Fink reunion. These events are hosted by his wife in Manti, Utah, where they were living when he passed. Enthusiasts pour in from around the world every year to frolic in honor of Ed.
All right, boys, let's frolic! Let's frolic! My wife is a zombie.
That must be such a like weird gathering.
I want to go.
I am very intrigued, actually. Yeah. Maybe there's like fans of him. Like, does he have like strong Mormon fans? That are like, I like his stuff. His later work.
Yeah, I like his Knott's Berry work.
Yeah. I like the menus from Knott's Berry Farm. Yeah. Thank you.
And then you got guys that are like, yeah, I'm Rob Zombie.
I bet he's got lots of like German fans.
We like und Rat Fink.
I like a Rat Fink and like Dragnot.
It's like a big rat.
Dragnot. It's hard to, there's a fine line between German guy and Fred Durst. Dragnot. Dragnot.
I never thought of that.
Huh. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Durst seems like it's a German.
Oh, Durst. Friedrich Durst.
Friedrich Durst.
Bernie Schwartz.
Bernie Schwartz, the Mormon. I'm Bernie Schwartz, the Mormon sign painter.
All right. Well, Ed's work showed the world that anyone with imagination and determination could design and build a car. You don't have to be a certified automotive engineer or work within the industry. You can make a big old hairy, stinky rat. Again, Ken Gross sums up the importance of his work beautifully. Quote,
I think Ed was a visionary. He was rebellious in a fun way, and he kind of nailed it before anybody else did. Everything Ed did had a whimsical side. He had a great imagination, and he saw the fun side of hot rodding that nobody else had.
Ed remains a beloved and iconic figure among car enthusiasts.
Can I have more oatmeal, please?
And artists alike. His innovative car designs defined the Southern California hot rod scene and continue to influence custom with a K culture today. Likewise, his playfully atrocious monster caricatures like Rat Fink turned him into a pop art iconoclast. As Big Daddy himself once said,
money comes and goes, but Rat Fink is forever.
That's how they talk in the 50s.
Feel like this same formula has been reused over the years, like Garbage Pail Kids.
Uh-huh.
And then like in the early 2000s when everyone was wearing like the SpongeBob with gold teeth, holding money.
Like airbrush stuff.
Or like Taz and Bugs dressed like Crisscross.
Yeah. That's a real shirt that I own.
Yep.
It is.
That's a real shirt that I own.
That's a real shirt that I own.
Even like
when we should start a podcast called That's a Real Shirt That I Own. And just talk about our shirts.
Yeah. There's like an improv game where you make a shirt.
Really?
There?
I don't know. But we could have other people on and talk about their shirts.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Hey, what shirt are you wearing today? And they take off their boiled shirt and t-shirt underneath.
Yeah. Dude, Ed Roth. What a guy.
Yeah.
What a guy.
I love anyone who, like, you know, needles society.
Yeah.
This is from the New York Times. It's a Sunday opinion piece.
Oh, that rag.
It's called The Long Strange Tale of California's Surf Nazis.
Oh, surf Nazis must die.
Yes. So, as a quote, as a passionate student of surf culture and history, though, I've also seen a lot more swastikas. The first commercially made surfboards sold in California in the 1930s had swastikas burned into their tails and were marketed as the swastika model by Pacific Systems Home of Los Angeles. Quote, in the 1959 edition of Surf for Surf, The Search for Surf, a series of surf movies by Greg Knoll, included Californian surfers in Nazi stormtrooper uniforms riding Flexa flyers in a storm drain while friends held up a Third Reich flag.
Yikes.
Yeah. Ed Roth, the artist and custom car visionary known as Big Daddy, sold plastic Nazi stormtrooper helmets to surfers in the mid-1960s and told Time Magazine, 60s, quote...
60s? That's too late.
Told Time Magazine, quote, that Hitler really did a hell of a public relations job for me, end quote.
I mean, that's pretty rough.
That's pretty bad. That's in the 60s.
Oh, right. Yeah, let's listen to some listener mail. Yeah. Hi, Pass Gas team. Love the show. I hope you all are excited to be back to work after a long holiday season of sucking on chili dogs
you know
and staring at Mario Andretti's underpants. That only happened once, and it was only me. So these guys have not seen Mario Andretti in his underpants. And I think it's not just yet. Me and his wife. Yeah, not yet.
Yeah.
Have you ever watched old film of race finishes where some lunatic runs out on the track and waves the checkered flag practically in the faces of the drivers as they go by?
Okay.
Now they're standing in Rapunzel's Tower, 90 feet above the track. Nice ref. Waving. Or if you're Tim Cook at the 2022 USA Grand Prix in Austin, holding the checkered flag over the track.
Yeah, it wasn't a very good wave.
It wasn't a good wave. But Tom Holland, great wave at great Monaco. Wave.
Any idea when they stopped this ill-advised practice and whether or not some awful incident is associated with it? God, I hope not. But something tells me, as with many safety practices in motor racing, it had to start with a tragedy.
You know what?
That's... Keep it juiced, Wink Wink Nation. Chris from Massachusetts.
That's a great question, Chris. I think we could maybe add that to one of our upcoming grab bag episodes. That sounds like a nice little piece of history to include. Hopefully it's not super tragic, but I think we're going to try to get that in. We're going to try to answer that for you. So stay tuned, Chris. Thank you so much for your email. If you'd like to get in touch, unless you guys have anything else to add.
No, that's it.
All right.
I just want to say maybe listen out for that in the 200th episode.
Yeah.
Which is going to be coming up because this is 192.
Yeah.
192. It's going to be momentous.
So we're gonna look into that for you because I'm curious as well. Hopefully someone didn't get like disintegrated by a wing or something.
Yeah, hopefully not.
Yeah, hopefully not. But...
But probably.
Like, but probably, yeah. Like you said. If you'd like to get in touch with the show, hit us up at passgaspodcast@donutmedia.com, and maybe we'll read it on air. Or maybe not.
Yeah, maybe not. Really?
Maybe not. We don't owe you anything.
Yeah, we don't owe you anything.
If you'd like to follow the boys, hit them up. Or
follow
don't hit them
the
up.
Boys.
Follow the boys.
Follow the boys.
On social media, at James Pumphrey, at Joe G. Weber. Follow me, at Nolan J. Sykes, if you'd like. Big thank you to our amazing team, as always. We've got Christina Felsky, Gavin Kinzel, and Nick Giamuso on the cameras.
Yeah, and big thanks to our writer this week, Luce Tomlin Brenner.
Yeah.
And our guest, Scat Fink.
Yeah, Scat Fink. And Rob Zombie, thank you most of all. All right, we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.